The soaring highs and crushing lows of American Idol.
You know, these three beautiful people are trying for this competition, and Rick says, this is not good for anyone.
We'll unpack the results of last night's finals with two music industry vets, just ahead on Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Sarah Nardi. And we'll hear how the new owners of Mother Murphy's took their vision from pipe dream to reality.
We were the first ones that were like authentically sincere about maintaining the culture, that counterculture, just spark that Mother Murphy's has.
WGLT's Lindsay Jones talks with the new owners of Mother Murphy's to find out what motivated them to take over Uptown Normal's storied head shop. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead on Sound Ideas. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Susan Geckner.
Wow, I can hear everybody. I can hear everything. And it was eye-opening as to what I was missing before.
Susan's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm Sarah Nardi. Well, even if you didn't tune in to watch last night, by now you've probably heard the news. Leah Marlene is not the next American Idol. She made it all the way to the final three, but the Normal native did end up losing out last night to country singer Noah Robinson. Given all the love that we have for Leah Marlene around here, there were probably quite a few tears shed in the Twin Cities last night. But we are going to dust ourselves off and try to take a look at the bright side of things, because believe it or not, there is a bright side potentially to losing American Idol. Here to help me unpack what it means to not come out on top in the musical Thunderdome are Rick Valentin and Rose Marshak. They are professors of music and creative technologies at Illinois State University, but they're also real deal musicians. They founded the punk rock bands Poster Children and Salarymen, and they've toured and they've recorded extensively. So these guys know what they're talking about. And Rose and Rick, I wonder, before we get into last night's competition, what did you both think of Leah Marlene?
I just absolutely love her. I love her voice. I think I saw a still shot of her before I even heard her voice, and I loved her just from seeing the still shot. And I decided she's a punk. You know, she's like, think about like what she chose, like the song she chose. She didn't choose like Born in the USA, like to sing last night. She chose like an obscure song, you know. She just seems real and just lovely.
Well, I see what you're saying about being punk, because I think she even got a little flack from the judges. I think Lionel Richie said, well, you know, at this point, it's all about name recognition and basically kind of playing it safe with, you know, the Springsteen songs everybody knows. And she did choose one I wasn't familiar with, but she killed it.
Yeah. And it did upset me as I started following it. And one of the judges, you know, using the term weird or kooky. I don't think he used kooky, but just weird and all of those. It really kind of brought home the idea that, ooh, this is a really kind of normal mainstream
Thunderdome, as you say.
Yeah. Yeah. Popularity yeah. contest in a way. Yeah. And I think as musicians and very early on, you know, being in Battle of the Bands and things like that, you learn very early on, oh, it's not winning the Battle of the Bands is not necessarily the best thing, because it is a popularity contest, and that doesn't necessarily mean you have legs or the foundation to sort of
right,
continue
the talent to carry you through.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if we can talk about the weird label that got affixed to her pretty early on. I don't find her particularly weird, you know, quirky. No, is she kind of like the mass appeal cookie cutter pop star? She isn't, and it kind
Thank
of seems
goodness.
Like right anything that falls outside of that very narrow, you know, construction is weird. And I was really worried that she was going to win and they would slowly kind of pry the weird out of her
yeah,
exactly.
to make
yeah,
her more appealing
yeah.
to people.
And even, all right, so when we were watching this last night, and this is I'm sorry, but for me, this is the first time I ever watched American Idol because I don't.
Same.
To me, music is not sports. Like, it's not, it shouldn't be a competition. Music is beautiful and for everybody, you know, or maybe not for everybody. Anyway, we were watching this and when they got, you know, we had to weather the commercials and the Bruce Springsteen songs and everything like that. And then they were like, now we're going to eliminate one person. And it got really quiet. There was probably timpani playing or something. And it got quiet in our house. And you said, and my stomach, like my heart dropped past my stomach before this even happened because, you know, these three beautiful people are trying for this competition. And Rick says, this is not good for anyone. This is terrible.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I was so brave. I don't watch either regularly. First of all, I'm in bed by that time of night usually, but you know, like I don't watch that kind of television. I never really have, but this is another thing that strikes me about Leah and her competitors. I think you make a really good point. These are young people. These are mushy little lumps of clay, you know, who haven't found themselves as people, let alone artists. So to face this level of scrutiny and rejection, and then for the winners, I mean, now they're kind of, you know, they're contractually obligated to keep doing idol stuff. So they won't really find that path to themselves, whatever that is, until this is over, right?
That's like, right.
Does that concern you as artists who have been there?
It does concern me, and it's something, you know, I think just from our past, it's something we always resisted. To be fair, though, I think the world is changing, the audience is changing, and, you know, I think of someone like Billie Eilish, right, who's been able to sort of counter that path for especially young women in music, right, which is like this kind of Barbie doll, cookie cutter, whatever, you know, kind of, ooh, I don't even want to say it, but kind of like, oh, this is terrible to say, but kind of like this virgin to whore transition, you know, kind of very stereotypical.
Yeah, no, it's the dichotomy that most women are forced up against at some point in their life. Yeah.
And now I feel like audiences, well, the young people who like new music, right, they're looking for, we've kind of moved back towards an era, which is similar to maybe what happened in the 70s, where it was this idea of honesty. Now, you can talk about manufactured honesty and putting on that play, but I think people are starting to value even somebody like Olivia Rodrigo, right, who's gone through that sort of system of being like a teen star and then becoming a pop star. I think even her music has that more personal aspect. And there have been examples of that in the past, but where there's more of a trend of this honesty and acknowledgement of humanity, flaws, you know, not being this perfect model, like literally, where you're this kind of cultural, you know, maybe destructive cultural ideas of beauty and body and sexuality, all these complex things that we're working out with our society and our culture, right? All of a sudden, our pop stars, I think newer pop stars are starting to show that people want, you know, humans.
Yeah. And I think Leah Marlene has shown herself to be profoundly human, and perhaps that worked against her a little bit. And, you know, a competition that's designed around manufacturing pop stars. If you're just joining us, this is Sound Ideas. I'm Sarah Nardi. I'm joined by Rick Valentin and Rose Marshak. They are professors of music at Illinois State University, but they are also bona fide punk rockers who have toured and recorded extensively, so they know the music business inside and out. And we're talking about what happens next for Leah Marlene now that she's lost American Idol. And I wonder, what do you think comes next in her career now that this experience, let's call it, is over?
In not being beholden to American Idol, she's in so much better shape. I say this to my music industry students all the time. Which do you think is better, a 10-record deal with Warner Brothers or a 2-record deal with Warner Brothers? Do you know the answer?
It's 2.
Always, yeah, because you want the least amount of ties to you as possible. Or like, you want to, yeah, go on.
But I think she is going to be connected to American Idol. And I do believe that even if you're not the finalist, there are some contractual obligations that happen. But I think in this modern culture, like with social media, especially with TikTok, you're able to bypass a lot of that system, right? The old school music system is still a powerful thing in getting your face out in front of people. But the reality is that you have control too as an artist in forming your identity. So I think her future, she to me seems like an artist, a musician, a songwriter, right? Not a pop star.
Right.
Right. And so I think if she follows the pop star path, the cookie cutter pop star path, that is a path of failure. But even if you go through that path, there are plenty of people who are reborn after that as what they originally were, which is a singer-songwriter, and then they gain an audience. And so I think just in the general experience we've all had kind of as a community and as the nation's had watching the show is she does make a personal connection. Mm-hmm. And so that's a powerful, powerful thing. So whether or not that means that millions of people will find that sort of maintain that connection with her over the next 20 or 30 years, or if it's 100 people or 1,000 people or 100,000 people, I think that's the path for her. Is she's obviously someone who's got the talent, but also is able to connect with people. And so that's something that can be sustaining.
Yeah. And that's what art is. And you're right. She seems to have that just kind of inborn in her, that ability to connect. And I think the more layers of interruption that get in between her and her audience, you know, in terms of a label or American Idol or all these industry factors that kind of separate a person from themselves, you know, I think the fact that she has less of that to deal with now is a good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And she has a member, you know, I mean, let's not overlook that her father, you know, has been through this process,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
And so that's an amazingly valuable insight to have. I have no idea what their relationship is, but just to be able to talk and see the everyday life of someone who's been through this kind of career path and understand the ups and downs and how you have to be resilient and how obviously within their family, at least music is a continuum, right? It's a continuum in our family, right? And so then you realize, oh, okay, you know, music can be a career and it can be an integral part of your life. But that doesn't necessarily mean that fame has to be that. And fame, even for people who become famous, right? It's not a lifetime part of their lives for most of famous people.
And I got to say, it doesn't seem to make people very happy. It just doesn't, right?
I agree. I'm always reminded of a David Foster Wallace line in one of, I think it's in Infinite Jest. But there's a tennis star who's like really wants to be a more famous tennis star, right? There's a tennis player who really wants to be a more famous tennis player. And I think that he consults a guru. I read this like 20 years ago on tour, but he consults a guru and the guru says the glory and happiness that you get from seeing this person's fame is not what they experience. You know, they don't experience the same joy that you experience in watching them play.
That's Rose Marshak and Rick Valentin, ISU music professors and professional punk rockers. You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Sarah Nardi. Okay, so now we turn from pop culture to counterculture. Mother Murphy's is an iconic presence in Uptown Normal. The beloved head shop has been around since the late 1960s. Not that you would know, right? But times, they are a-changin', and WGLT's Lindsay Jones caught up with Griffin Burns and Colton Walsh, two of the shop's new owners who say that taking over Mother Murphy's was always kind of a pipe dream, until it wasn't.
Mother Murphy's went up for sale in December of 2019, when then-owners Mike and Becky Williams decided to retire. They'd taken over the business from its founders back in 1990, and just as they preserved and enhanced the culture of the store, a welcoming, safe, yet still edgy counterculture vibe, they wanted to find people who would prioritize that over anything else. And that's why Griffin Burns, one of the new owners, says he and two other partners were chosen.
We're townies for one. We've been coming to Mother Murphy's. We felt as though it's like, listen, we were kind of formed by the culture of Mother Murphy's ourselves. So we want to bring that back almost full circle. And that's what we came with. You know, that's what we went to them with. And I mean, here we are today. Obviously, that was what they were looking for.
The other co-owners include Noah Anderson, who formerly ran Anderson's Classic Barbershop in Uptown Normal, and a childhood friend of Burns's, Colton Walsh, who says he upended his life to move back to town from Washington State and help run Mother Murphy's.
I uprooted from where I was at and made my way back here within a month's time. Had it been anybody else, I probably would have just said, that sounds really cool. I hope it turns out for you.
When the shop went up for sale, there was significant interest in purchasing it. Burns says he learned in conversations with the previous owners that around 50 serious offers had been made. And with those offers came different visions from Mother Murphy's, with some prospective buyers saying they wanted to turn it into just a glass shop or relocate it from its location in Uptown Normal.
And they said that we were the first ones that were like authentically sincere about maintaining the culture, that counterculture just spark that Mother Murphy's has. And that's what they were looking for.
So Burns says the three soon-to-be co-owners had to plan quickly how exactly they'd pay for Mother Murphy's.
We all literally scraped every dollar we had. We took out loans. I mean, we didn't have any money.
Then they had to figure out how to make a profit, how to restock the store's limited inventory.
Basically, what we were doing was we'd sell one, we'd buy two. Same thing with like the skate company. We had a few decks. We'd sell one, buy two kind of thing. So that's how we started to build things back up.
Right now, financially, things are evidently going well enough for an expansion to Champaign, the first ever off branch of the original Mother Murphy's store, to a place outside of Normal. More on that later. First, a driving question that I had for both Walsh and Burns. How do you keep a counterculture vibe going in 2022? Part of the edge that Mother Murphy's had for a long time was that it was a place that sold grinders, bongs, pipes, stuff you'd need to consume cannabis during a time when cannabis consumption wasn't legal. Here's former owner Mike Williams speaking to the producers of a video by Fell Hall Productions in 2019 about what it used to be like for such shop owners back in the day.
There was a big push by government to close all hippie head shops, smoke shops, bong shops, and there was a lot of people getting prosecuted. And they were successful. They closed most of them. And most people were afraid to get into the business. You know, it was a big barrier for anybody to get in the business. Well, I better have a good lawyer if I'm going to do that. You know, store would open, maybe have records and posters and stuff, throw some pipes on the shelf. Next thing you know, a policeman's visiting. So you get rid of that or we're going to come after you. And it's, just pull it as opposed to, you know, having them come after them.
Although strictly business-wise, there was a benefit to this for Mother Murphy's.
We were getting customers from Peoria, Champaign, as far as St. Louis and Chicago, because there were no stores like this.
Obviously, things are different today, especially in Illinois, where recreational cannabis was legalized in 2020.
You can actually call a bong a bong. Whereas before, if you said bong,
you had to leave.
You had to, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. No, we literally would have, we've wrestled with that, because at the time when we took over, it became legal. And we thought, like, what does that mean for us?
Yes.
Because that's exactly, that was exactly our thought. And funny enough, it took about these last 2 years to kind of figure this out.
Burns says they've had all this time to come up with what they will describe as the soul of Mother Murphy's, a store that has sold everything from custom-made t-shirts to glass to vinyl records to incense to whatever. Here's how they've started to answer that question.
Mother Murphy's is a little different because what we're doing is we're saying, we actually want you to come in and put your mark on us. Mm-hmm. Because what that actually represents is you are creating that very culture. Mm-hmm. We're not just telling you, here's the culture that you should be a part of. It's you should come in and help us form that culture. Right. It's like, you can't really do that. What other places can you, you know, Sharpie up the wall or just slap like stickers and posters all over the place just at your own free will? Mm-hmm. But by doing that, you are participating in the, like, the beauty of life and culture, and you're forming part of who we are.
Speaking of who or what Mother Murphy's is, those who've dropped by the shop might be familiar with Shockwaves, a separate business venture started by Becky Williams in 1992. Shockwaves has moved around in that it did have a Bloomington location for a time, but eventually the skateboarding shop came back home to the Mother Murphy's location in Uptown Normal after 13 years. Here's Mike Williams in that Fell Hall Productions interview again, speaking about the impact his wife's business had.
I feel like my wife has raised, you know, a couple of generations of skaters.
But neither Burns nor Walsh said they feel up to the task of running Shockwaves, or at least to the extent that it needs cared for and preserved, much like the Mother Murphy's store does. They, along with the third co-owner, Noah Anderson, say they believe someone else needs to take over Shockwaves in order to give it what it deserves.
Doing one thing really well is already, like, super difficult. Even between the three of us, it's a lot to do. To do two things, like, very different things really well is near impossible. Like, it feels that at least sometimes. So, So we're deciding that we're going to be putting it up for sale.
So what exactly does that mean for the 30-year-old skateboarding store that has an identity melded with Mother Murphy's?
What it means for its future at the moment, We don't know what's going to happen. We just know that hopefully we find somebody the same way Mike and Becky found us, And we put it in the right hands.
And if you're doing the math and wondering how running two stores could be more challenging for three people than it was for the two other owners, Mike and Becky, here's another development that's new to Mother Murphy's. An expansion, a second location that's currently being prepared right now in the campus area of Champaign near the U of I. It's the first ever in the store's history.
It started with, you know, we have a lot of people come from Champaign, and it was like really cool and humbling that they were like, I would ask, you know, what brought you into town today? Oh, we wanted to come here. That's really cool. Like, whoa, like you drove 45 minutes just to come here? Yeah, awesome. Okay. We eventually got to the point where it's like, we want to bring that blank canvas to Champaign, and we want you to be able to form your culture now. You know, give you something to put your mark down on.
Burns says it's been difficult to try to replicate the atmosphere of the culture, the vibe that the 5-decades-old Mother Murphy's location has curated from its thousands of visitors and unique owners. But they're doing their best, and if things go the way they've envisioned them, then the Champaign Mother Murphy's will curate its own vibe over time, just like the original in Uptown Normal.
I mean, we own the place, but it's more like we're shepherds than anything. We're just here as stewards for a time to take care of the place, and the next generation is going to take it over one day. You know, we'll be long gone, and it's like, what do we do with this place? What was our mark on this place? Were we true to the Mother Murphy legacy? It's the most we can ask of ourselves.
The new Champaign location is set to open on July 1st. I'm Lindsay Jones.
Thanks for choosing WGLT Sound Ideas, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Sarah Nardi. The show today was produced by John Norton. You can find all our Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org, and you can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM, or follow us on Twitter, we're at WGLT News. This is 89.1 WGLT and WGLT.org.